All right, this is August 26, 1981, and seated in my office is Wayne Ashbaugh, who has just retired as registrar of Mount Union College. He's worn several other hats during his association with the college and, of course, is an alumnus of the institution. So I'll let Wayne talk a bit, and he came from Louisville, and we'll find out if that's where he grew up and how he got to Mount Union. Wayne?
Well, Yost, I went to Louisville to school, really not from the beginning of my school career. My parents moved from from Pennsylvania to Canton, Ohio. My father was a steel worker, and we lived in Canton until I was in the fourth grade. At that time, or several years before that, Superior Sheet Steel was started in Louisville, and my father moved from Canton to Louisville, working in the steel mill in Louisville. For several years, he drove back and forth, but transportation was a little more difficult in those times. As I recall, he had a Model T Ford he drove, and in the wintertime, it was pretty drafty. And after a couple of years of that, we moved to Louisville. At that time, I was in the fourth grade, and I finished my schooling in Louisville, graduated from Louisville High School.
Well, let me ask you, were you interested? Did you play athletics at Louisville?
Yes, played football and basketball. At the time, we did have a track team. And a baseball team, and I played baseball. Two alumnus were the guiding hands behind those endeavors. when I got into like the seventh and eighth grade, at that time the High School Athletic Association did not require that the coach be a faculty member. And the man who handled the football team in the high school at that time was Jay Shoemaker.
Oh, yeah.
Who was an attorney in town. And so for my freshman year, through my freshman year in high school, Jay Shoemaker was the football coach. Uh-huh. And then another Mount alumnus came on the scene, Howard Peg Wilson.
Oh, yes.
And he became the football coach and was my coach through my sophomore, junior, and senior year. And I'm sure helped in encouraging me to come to Mount Union.
That's just about the closest place you could come to at that time.
And at the time, I graduated from high school in 1931. And if you remember, the economic period was kind of rough. And the chances of going anywhere else to school would have been pretty slim. I probably had at that time a part interest in the Stark Electric because I rode that Stark
you
Electric
back and forth,
back and forth for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, how long did you commute? All the time you were in college?
4 years. Part of my senior year, I had access to a car, an old Model A Ford that I drove sometimes. But all the rest of the time, I rode that Star Collector. It was interesting. I often think back on that. I played football here, and at the time, the Star Collector had a monthly pass you could buy for $5. The $5 pass entitled you to 20 rides, and my budget would not allow me to spend more than $5 a month. And so I had to get here on those 20 rides. If I had a 720 class, I had to ride the Stark Electric class. And so I had to thumb my way home almost every night after football practice. And at that time, new 62 was not in, of course. And you went in old 62, and when you came to the turnoff to Louisville, where 44 was in, that was called Death Curve at that time.
Right.
cars didn't go into Lewis Hill. They kept
That's
on
what
going
I
to
was talking.
Canton. And I many a night I had to walk from Death Curve into home.
How far would that be?
Would have been about 2.5 miles.
That's good conditioning.
That's right.
And work up an appetite.
And work up an appetite, true.
Yeah. And so you came to Mound and you played for Harry Geltz here.
Right.
And Bob Wright.
Right.
In basketball.
First year, Jack Thorpe was still with the
Oh, he was still in.
At that time, freshmen were not eligible to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were the cannon fodder team, the freshman, yeah. My freshman year, while he was the head coach, the varsity coach.
Right. And were you out for track?
No, I was not out for track.
Right.
I participated in some intramurals and mm-hmm. basketball. I played, only was out for basketball my freshman year here.
Mm-hmm.
And played football all 4 years, but I did not play basketball all 4 years.
But at least you had an acquaintance with Bob Wright.
I took all the courses he offered,
yeah.
Did everything that he gave from the standpoint of his teaching. Yes.
He always impressed me. He was a shrewd coach and could get the most out of the team. He could.
Yes, my recollection of the things he did, he would allow us in his coaching class, he would allow us to come into practice and observe, and then we would discuss parts and elements of the practice session in class maybe the next day. But my recollection was that he was a real disciplinarian. I mean, he really required his basketball players to do the things he asked them to do the way he wanted them to do it, and he was not at all willing to let them get away with it done partly right.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be done right. And then I think a good part of the success was his emphasis on detail and his ability to get the cooperation of the men that worked for him. They did it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, once he proved he was successful,
right.
It was much easier for
That's
him
right.
to have yeah. his team members do what he asked them to do.
No, I can remember, and you too, that some of his teams are just, as you say, the attention to detail, they just demoralize another
yeah.
team, and there was just no contest
That's
after
right.
that.
Yes, I wouldn't mean to underestimate the caliber of the basketball players he had, but I think that at the time, other schools had good caliber
sure.
basketball players too. I just think that Bob Wright got 100% out
right.
of his, maybe
yeah.
110% out
yeah.
of his.
Yeah, I think that's true. So your ambition was to be a coach then, is that right?
Yes, I think that's what I always wanted to do.
Okay. It's never rubbed off. And you left here, and that was kind of a rough time to get a job, because I tried to get a job the next year, and you did a lot of interviewing. Where did you start out?
Started out at Louisville.
At Louisville.
Which was, I guess, unique and exceptional. That I had graduated from the high school 4 years ago, and to go back to that same school 4 years later was
well,
it's not supposed to be the easiest.
That's right.
But it was exceptional in that position opened up, and I had a chance to get to take that job in that position. Strangely enough, the qualifications I had taken, the certification requirements for health and physical education. At that time, the college gave the minimum number of hours necessary to be certified by the state. But my major was English. And my teaching responsibilities when I came to Louisville, I was hired as an English teacher.
That's an odd combination.
And was not hired as a coach, but the coach at that time was still Peg Wilson. And so I volunteered my services, and for that first year, I helped him coach the football team on a volunteer basis. after that year, he moved into administration, was an assistant principal and eventually the principal of the high school. And the man they hired to take his place asked me if I would continue as an assistant, a volunteer assistant. And I did that. The man was Harry Strobel, who was a teammate of Paul Brown's at Massillon, and went from Louisville to Barberton, and from Barberton to Ohio State, was an assistant at Ohio State. But he was only there 1 year. And at the end of that year, my 2 years as, on a volunteer basis as a football coach got me the football job.
Oh, I see.
So I took the head football job 2 years after I had signed on as a teacher.
All right. So you started out as a football coach. How long did you coach that?
Well, I coached football for 10 years at Louisville, from 37 through 47. 2 years after I came there as football coach, I was also given the basketball job, and so I was the head basketball coach from 39 through 47. Mm-hmm. And during that period of time, we were permitted at that time to have spring football practice, and I was a real advocate of dedication to the sport of football. And so I always had spring football practice, but it only lasted about 1 year, and the state then put through a regulation that banned spring football in high schools. And so to try to compensate for the fact that you couldn't have spring football, I started track and required all my football players to be on the track team. And so I became track coach in 1939, and we had a track team from that time on while I was there. But Louisville was a good, that was a good community.
I think that's right.
It's, they're fine people, and great cooperation from the school, from the community. I think that's still true.
I think it is, but I think maybe even more so when you were there, because you didn't have the building up.
No.
That has been the last, 10, 20 years, and was more of a community unto itself. It's become so much extended out so
yes.
far now.
True.
I think so. It'll make a difference. Well, then you had an opportunity, apparently, to strike out somewhere else, and is this when you went to Zanesville?
That's when I went to Zanesville. The opportunity was to take the head basketball job at Zanesville and be an assistant in football. that was not the easiest decision, I guess, at that time, because football was my favorite sport at that time. I had been more successful in coaching football at Louisville than I had in coaching basketball. I had had in that 8 year period 3 championship teams, and undefeated, and then a tied team 1 year in football, and I had 1 championship team in basketball. But, you know, the ambitions of a young coach
yeah.
was to see whether he could do the job at the next level.
Right.
And Zanesville was a good level. Zanesville was a good sized city with a good sized high school that actually would allow you to compete with any other high school in the state. It was in the classification at that time of A, which were those were the biggest high schools in the state. And so the opportunity to take the basketball job meant that I had a chance to get into the big school system and to find out what happened. The assistant football job didn't divorce me from football completely, and so I accepted the challenge to go to Zanesville.
What is that, Zanesville Rosecrans?
No, Zanesville Rosecrans was a parochial school.
All right.
The high school in Zanesville had been Lash High School.
I see.
It was a downtown high school, and while I was there, they built a new high school, just Zanesville High School.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, that new building And Grounds was the envy of a great number of communities in the state of Ohio because it was a fine high school at that time.
You were there at the old S Bridge and the circuitous route through Zanesville
right.
at that time.
You had to go right downtown,
right.
Route 40. You had to go right through the downtown area.
You wanted to go to Columbus, that's
right.
why you went down through.
You went to the middle of the bridge and turned left if you wanted to go to Columbus.
Right.
People often questioned about that, how you could turn left in the middle of the bridge, but that Y bridge was quite
a Y. Nice. I said S. It's a Y.
It's a
bridge.
Y bridge. Yes.
The S bridge was on the old National. That's
right.
Where they had the S bridge. The Y bridge was.
The Y bridge was in Zanesville.
Well, you were there, let's see, was there still glassworks and potteries
yes.
in Zanesville where you were there?
Yes. Roseville Pottery had a plant in Zanesville. It closed down during the period of time we were there, but that was the tail end of the mm-hmm. of the emphasis on those glassworks in
mm-hmm.
the area, yes.
Yeah. Did that do anything for your team? Some communities, you know, feel that if you have steelworks, you get a hard-nosed boy as a result of that.
Well, I don't believe so. There was a steel plant in Zanesville. The Armco steel plant was in Zanesville, and it may have helped us. At the time that I was in Zanesville, the same, I guess, as, say, here in Alliance, we didn't have the district or area high schools built up on the outskirts. There was not the high schools that took away
mm-hmm.
your students that were at the edge or
yeah.
the fringe of the territory. You got all of those. There weren't any of those
mm-hmm.
that helped them. So Zanesville was the community that covered that area, and quite an area. And as I said before, I think that kind of school is the ideal kind of school to try to reach the top
yeah.
in the state competition. You have to have enough, it has to be large enough to get reasonable candidates, to get enough candidates, and you have to be large enough to get enough community support to
yeah.
do that, and Zanesville did it. Now, we had another thing going for us in Zanesville, I think. The man that I went down to help in football, who was the head football coach and the athletic director, was a man by the name of George Flairboom, a Musk Kingdom graduate, and a native of Delton High, I believe. But he had success already in the football program. Zanesville played in what was called the Central Ohio League, which was a league composed of Marietta and Lancaster and Chillicothe and Dover and New Philly and Cambridge and those schools. It was a good competitive league.
Mm-hmm.
But he had been successful. So the athletic program, from a program standpoint, was a successful program. Now the basketball program hadn't been very successful. But the community was behind the high school athletic program. Because of the success of the football program. So that, I think, was
a big help.
That was right. That was in my favor.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Well, you had success with your basketball program there, Wayne. You had pretty good record.
It took a couple of years
oh, sure.
to get it organized.
Right.
But, yes, I went down there in 47, and it wasn't until it was in 55 that we won the state championship. We had a competitive team in 53 and in 54, but we reached the top in 55.
Mm-hmm.
And then we made the so-called Sweet 16 in 57, and we made it again in 58. So once we got over the hump, the momentum of success really
mm-hmm.
helped a great deal. We had baskets up in everybody's backyard, and every little guy that could throw a ball was throwing a ball, and that's a great help in developing a high school
yeah.
program, no question about it. I was able to engineer we had three junior high schools, and I was able to coordinate the junior high programs as real good feeder systems into the high school, and we even were able to set up elementary school programs. He didn't have gyms. We only had one elementary school gymnasium at that time, but we set up outdoor courts on most of the playgrounds of the elementary schools and got an elementary league going, which was helpful, I'm sure. But the success of the high school program certainly contributed to the involvement of the community.
Right. That certainly would. That's, and as you know, there's nothing like that kind of enthusiasm that you.
It's true.
That you have that way. Did you use any the, I don't know what the better word, the right system? Did you use your own approach, or how did you tailor to meet
well,
your goals?
Well, I think I used the right system at the beginning, and used. I hoped that I had followed his philosophy of his adherence to detail and to the correct teaching of fundamentals, and I think that certainly was borne out in the success of that program in Zanesville. I think the other thing that was new at the time was that contributed to our success was a full court pressing defense, and at that time nobody played a full court pressing defense, and I think that was a great help to us. We were successful being able to use that and implement it, and I know that that offset our lack of size. We did not have the 6'6 and 6'7 boys.
Well, now you were playing that. Was that before the real fast break, or were you just the beginning?
It was just the beginning of that. Yes, just at the beginning of it. Successful. It was successful enough in that respect that, I guess your ego is fed on the fact that. Other coaches feel that what you've done is worth finding out about.
Right.
And I know that for several years I was asked to discuss the fast break system at a number of coaching clinics, not only in Ohio, but in outside of Ohio, in Pennsylvania and New York, which I guess, feeds one's ego a bit.
But you've got to have success, or you don't make that level. That's
that's true.
That's the thing. You had pretty good material, or you utilized what you had to.
Well, it was good material. They weren't big men. That's all. We didn't have the year that we had won the state championship. Our biggest boy was 6'2".
Oh, that's.
And we played in the finals that year. We played Cincinnati Hughes. And Cincinnati Hughes had 2'6" boys. Well, we offset the size. At that time, we were able to offset the size with the full court defense, which the bigger teams didn't play a full court defense and didn't play a full court offense. And when they were forced to play the full court offense, they usually could not play it for four quarters.
Yeah. Well, let me backtrack a bit here more domestically. You met up with Helen. She's a Louisville girl.
Helen was a Louisville girl. Helen was from the little crossroad place between Louisville and Canton called Fairhope.
Fairhope, yes.
She went to, they had a grade school in Fairhope, but they had no high school. And that community came to Louisville to high school. So she and I were classmates in high school. Both graduated at the same time, and we were married in 1936, after 1 year after my graduation from Mount. She spent 2 years at Kent and was certified at that time. The two-year teaching program was in force at Kent, and she had been teaching. She'd gone to Kent straight out of high school also, and so she had been teaching for a couple of years when we were married. I had been teaching 1 year.
And then she taught after you came to Alliance.
Yes.
Or did she teach prior to that?
She taught in Zanesville.
I see. All right.
She did not teach when we first went to Zanesville. When we first went to Zanesville, the obligations of the family were great enough for her to stay home for several years. Once the family got organized and the youngsters were big enough to maneuver a bit for themselves, mm-hmm. they were all in school, she went back and taught. Mm-hmm. And then when we came here, she taught half days most of the time here in Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you got here, of course you were an alumnus of Mount, and our basketball situation here, we were looking for some leadership, and you had demonstrated at Zanesville. You're talking about different levels of the college level appeal to you at this point.
Well, I suppose that same question arises in one's mind. The same thing that made me move from Louisville to Zanesville, I guess, was a force behind my moving from Zanesville to Mount Union. Suffice it to say, I think I could have stayed in Louisville for an extended period of time mm-hmm. and run the Louisville program. I mean, it was successful enough that there was no, I was under no criticism from what I was doing there.
And probably would have become athletic director. That's usually the pattern, isn't it?
And I think the same thing could have been true in Zanesville, because the community was really enthusiastic about the basketball program, mm-hmm. and I was getting every kind of cooperation that I could possibly get from there. But again, I say, in the coaching profession, the same as in maybe any other profession, your ambition makes you want to try to see whether you can do it if there's another level to do
another
it.
Another level, right.
And
I just want to check it to be sure we're not down on that. Well, you came here and inherited a sputtering sort of basketball machine.
Well, yes.
We've gone through three or four, as I recall, three or four coaches. Short tenure at that time.
Right. I followed George Hunter, who on that list of coaches from after Bob Wright left had the longest tenure of that group and had certainly had success in his coaching tenure here. He was ready to accept some other challenge, I think, in that his basketball team that year had graduated most of his top players, and so he was facing a lean year from the standpoint of returning veterans. Of course, at the time, I was very green and very inexperienced in all the ramifications of recruiting, and all the questions that might arise mm-hmm. and all the responsibilities that would arise from the standpoint of success or failure of your program. And so that part didn't really sink in on me until after I was here. I was interested in coaching basketball.
In high school, it's a different approach.
That's right. In high school, you didn't have to go out and recruit those players. Those players were all coming.
Yes.
And your main responsibility was coaching. And I really loved coaching. Mm-hmm. I really liked to coach. And so the recruiting was a new aspect of it that didn't really hit me until during that first year after I had been here and mm-hmm. started work. So it was it took several years for me to orient myself to the recruiting responsibility.
What was it, 65? When did you?
I came here in 58.
58, all right.
I came here in 58, and then I left in 65 to register.
That's the 65 date there. Yeah. Right. What were your feelings when you took a team out on the floor of Memorial Hall.
Well, you know,
the first time. We're okay. Let's see.
You know, I
testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, now we're talking about your initial reaction to coming out on the court memorial.
Well, I guess you have to realize and have to remember that I had experienced and witnessed and had watched Bob Wright's teams play for 4 years in Memorial Hall, and to have the opportunity to coach a team coming out on that same floor in Memorial Hall was quite a thrill. It really was. Bob Wright had, you know, in my book, was one of the great basketball coaches in the country, and this is where he coached. And to be coaching a team in the same institution and playing on the same floor was gave you quite a feeling. It really did.
Well, as I as you say, your material was a little lean, and the recruiting was a problem. And you peaked in your basketball here about the time you went to the registrar, wasn't that right?
That's true. It took me, as I say, several years to get this recruiting thing organized, and in the 64-65 year, we had a good bunch of boys. They were all freshmen and sophomores, and we finally had gotten enough size that we were competitive in the Ohio Conference, and we were able to hold our own against most of the conference teams. The whole team was back that next year, and in fact, that next year the team won the Ohio Conference championship. That's
right. Yeah, I always thought that was a little ironic. You worked that hard, and but of course,
difficult
this
decision. It really was, Yost. That year, along about the end of May, the president called me into the office and said, "I have a proposition for you." And he said, "I want you to think about it." And he said, "I'd like you to consider moving into the registrar's office as registrar." And I was flabbergasted. I didn't have any answer. I couldn't say anything at all to him. And I said, "Well," I finally said, "Well, I really will have to think about it if you'll give me any time." And it so happened that I was scheduled to make a basketball presentation at what in that time was considered one of the top coaching schools in the country, one at Kutcher's, New York. And I was enthused and, you know, was feeling very good that they'd asked me to come there and do this. And then at the same time, I have an offer to quit coaching and go into administration. So I went to Kutcher's and made the presentation and came back, and I really did a lot of soul searching At the time, and I guess these are things that entered into my ultimate decision, but at that time I was past 50 years of age. The chances of anyone hiring a basketball coach at the college level of that age,
yes,
would have been slim, very slim, to move from here to another basketball coaching job. The advancement here would have been athletic director. Jack Rehfeld was entrenched in that athletic director's job with no thought and no apparent steps being taken from his standpoint of moving. And so it looked like maybe the wise move from the standpoint of my family and my own future would be to attempt this change in positions. I know at the time my wife didn't think I would do it. I know that members of my basketball team didn't think I would do it. And I guess I surprised them both when I finally did it. I really believe, though, that it was a wise decision from the standpoint of our family and from the standpoint of my own personal career goals and my own life. I think that the move into administration was a good move. I think that it changed my career, that's for sure.
That's right.
It changed my whole objectives and aims and so on and so forth. But at the same time, it kind of revitalizes one when you do that, in that you get renewed enthusiasm and you put forth renewed effort and you try to find out everything you can about the new area you're going into. And I think, I think that's important, and I think it's helpful. And I think it helped me overcome the transition from coaching into administration. I had finished my 30th year in coaching. Mm-hmm. And I know I've talked to many people that say, well, after 30 years in one career, it's pretty tough to change to another career.
Yes.
But I really think it was a good change. I really think it was beneficial to me and to my family. I really think it was.
And of course, as you sit back now, you did sort of have the best of both worlds, because you were able to be athletic director in the final result there.
That's true. And I suppose one other thing about the registrar's position, I think that helped me decide to do that, was the fact that the position didn't divorce one from contact with students.
Right.
I had enjoyed the contact with students in coaching, and the registrar's office, you certainly weren't divorced from that.
Yeah.
You saw a lot of students, you had a lot of contact with students, so you weren't divorced from that. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to work with the Athletic Board of Control, which kept me in touch
That's
with
right.
the athletic program and with the High Athletic Conference.
Yeah.
I became the faculty representative to the conference. So it wasn't as though I shut everything off. I did retain some of that contact that I think helped the changeover to be less traumatic as far as I was concerned.
And of course, in a sense, you've been, as you look back now, you're an assistant coach, head coach in high school. You were coach in college and, as you say, on the athletic board of control, and then athletic director. So you've been on all the spots, haven't you?
I just about touched all the spots. That's right.
Yeah.
I had an opportunity in the High Athletic Conference to serve in most of those responsible positions.
Mm-hmm.
They have organizations and the basketball coaches were organized, and I served 1 year as president of the My Conference basketball group. And then they organized the faculty representatives, and I spent a year as the president of the faculty representatives. And then I guess the culmination of it was that I was elected president of the High Conference and served a term there. I think that I enjoyed, and hopefully I fulfilled the responsibilities of those various assignments.
Yeah. No, I didn't have any question about that. I think you have a fine record. That's a test to it, Wayne. But I was just interested here that you touched all those bases that way. So many people you know are basketball coach, period, and that's the experience.
The athletic director's job, I think, that I took for the last 2 years, you know, I suppose somewhere in the 30 years that I had been in coaching, athletic director's assignments had always been a part of that somewhere. That was an ultimate goal somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then never, I guess it never got completely washed out. It was always there somehow. Uh-huh. And when the president came to me and made this suggestion, and I said, well, I'm not about to leave the registrar's yeah. job at this time,
right.
and change over completely, and so it required some study on the part of the college administration and some certainly deep thought on my part
yeah.
to finally come up with that combination that allowed me to do both for those last 2 years,
right.
And I appreciated that opportunity and I'm glad I had the experience of...
But I remember just a time or two after that, when you walked over to Timken, I could just tell by the way, your
yeah.
attitude and the way you walked, you know, this was, you were relishing and looking
yeah.
forward to that.
I think that's true.
Yeah. So it's been an interesting, sort of a many-faceted type of career. Well, I'm sure the experiences on the court and in the athletics, but what about some of the frustrations or the happier moments in the registrar's office?
Well, I suppose the first couple of years were really learning years, to learn the details and to learn the responsibilities of that office,
mm-hmm.
and to determine the real routine that had to be followed. You know, in the background, Bob Tripp had been registrar and admissions director, and it only in the latter part, I believe, the latter part of his stay in that office had it been separated into registrar and admissions director. And then the following registrar was only there for about 1.5 years or something like that. And so the establishment of procedure and routine in the office, it was a great opportunity to establish that, because it hadn't been established,
right.
From the standpoint of the various procedure to follow and the forms that had to be developed and so on and so forth. And I kind of relished that.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that, the opportunity to be able to set those things up. I suppose if you would consider frustrations, I don't know how frustrating they would be. They're probably more frustrating to students and faculty than they were to the registrar. But scheduling was a frustrating time sometimes. It's frustrating to students, it's frustrating to faculty members. But I really think that when the effort is made and the cooperation is given by faculty to establish their teaching schedules and to extend themselves to try to take care of students who are in a bind from the standpoint of scheduling, I think that, you know, the frustration is certainly modified considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly think that happened in my experience in the office, because I had great cooperation from faculty in setting up teaching schedules and setting up room assignments and getting grades in and so on and so forth. I don't think there were very many cases where I could have asked for it to be improved.
Mm-hmm.
The
You were there before, or after, I should say, the days of Joe Overholt then, who used to take his final examinations on a bus to Mexico with a group of Mennonites to sing and forget about sending them in.
Yeah, we had a couple of experiences like that. We had one with the choir once where they left on a tour like they always left on a tour at Christmas time, and then they left on a spring tour, and one time they took the grades with them, and I had to call St. Louis or someplace and have those grades given back to me over the phone. But that was only one time that I recall that mm-hmm. happened. We've had times when professors have been negligent in getting the grades in as fast as our office would like to have.
Yeah.
They might not have been negligent in their mind because they were doing it to the best of their ability. But it would have been, much more expedient if we would have had them in earlier to get our grade reports out. And I guess there have been times when I've called professors and asked them about their grade, but I've always had good cooperation from them from that standpoint. That hasn't been...
That wasn't one of the problems.
That wasn't one of the great problems, no.
Well, you had pretty good help. Did you inherit that, your girls in the office there?
Inherited my secretary, Mrs. Norma Hands. She had been hired by Jim...
Jose.
Mm-hmm. Jim was the person who took over for Bob Tripp
mm-hmm.
and was only in there about a year and a half or maybe 2 years at the most. Mrs. Hands was hired by him, and so she'd had that year and a half or 2 years with him. The recorder that I had for most of the time, I guess, well, for maybe half of the time, the one I inherited was Mrs. Martha Lutz, which was she was a real fixture in that recorder's office. She really knew that from beginning to end, and really maintained those academic records with great integrity, no question about that. About...
You could get along with her Scottish accent.
Oh, I got along all right. Got along all right. When we were in the old administration building, the recorder's office was separated from the...
It
was down at the end of the hall.
Yes.
And I remember the problem we had with Mrs. Lutz. We wanted to be able to converse with her without having to leave the office and go down there, and we wanted to put a telephone in down there. And we had a real argument with her putting a telephone in. She did not want that telephone in there at all.
Hmm.
We finally convinced her to put the telephone in, and I really think that she appreciated the convenience of that phone, because it saved her coming up to our office for very minor questions many times.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us had to make those trips back and forth. Plus the fact she now had access to faculty members that she didn't have before. But that was an interesting point. And I remember, that was the time when all grades were handwritten.
Yes.
And our records were great cardboard squares that we had handwritten all the students' names in and all their courses, their schedule, and then we had to handwrite the grades in, and from that we computed and made out the grade reports. We usually typed those grade reports, but they all had to be typed individually. But Mrs. Lutz figured every one of those GPAs. She would not even use an adding machine to do it. She didn't believe in those mechanical inventions. She didn't want to touch those even. And it was probably about the time she left was right when we were getting into the computerization.
Yes.
And it was probably a good thing that she didn't have to live through that, because she would have really had trouble.
So she told me one time, she went to church over here, so I knew her, and she told me what she thought of the computer one time.
Yeah, she didn't have much confidence in that mechanical...
No, she was the old school.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then the person that replaced her, Mrs. Marjorie Pennybaker, had been hired in the computer center when we first opened that center
mm-hmm.
as an operator of the machines over there. And she had problems because of the air conditioning that had to be maintained in that computer center. she had a problem from the standpoint of being able to function in that atmosphere. And so we talked to her about the possibility of her interest in the recorder's job here, and she seemingly was interested and anxious to make that change. And she'd been a recorder the whole time that I had that. So she probably, the two of them probably shared the period of time close to being equal, yeah. I suppose, in the registrar's office. Maybe Mrs. Pennybaker probably had a little more time than Mrs. Lutz did but when I had the registrar's position. But
it's a big help when you have consistent,
right.
good personality
right.
play.
Those people eventually know the routine,
mm-hmm.
and in the registrar's office, you can establish a routine pretty well,
mm-hmm.
because you have to get grades out at a certain time, you have to schedule at a certain time, you have to get transcripts at a certain time, and you can pretty well organize that office on a routine basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have people that can help establish that routine and then follow it, you've made a great
right.
step forward, and no question about that. And the two people that are in the office and work with me in that office did a tremendous job from that standpoint.
You know, Marge is down at Wilson now.
Yes, I understand that she's
going down to that.
Right.
Well, tell me about the routine now. How do you classify, or where do you put the fern in the registrar's office?
Interesting. The fern was given to me by a public school teacher. This public school teacher had kept the fern in her room for some 20 years. Mrs. Ferner kept the fern. Mrs. Ferner retired from the school, and so the fern had to go. She had given it to a friend of hers to keep in the summertime. And the friend would just put it in the front porch and leave it in the front porch. And each fall, Mrs. Fern would come back and put it back in the schoolroom. Well, the fern didn't have any place to go in the wintertime. The person that handled it in the summer had no place to put it in the winter. And so I don't know why I was chosen as the person that they were going to ask, but I knew both these people.
Mm-hmm.
And the one asked me one time, do you have any place in that new administration building where you could use that fern? And I said, yeah, I think maybe I do. And so fern became a fixture in the registrar's office.
Right. With a special light even.
With a special light even. They told me, Dr. Brusky told me that the fluorescent light from the fluorescent lights in the building, in the office, would not maintain that fern, that I had to have an incandescent light. And he says, if you just put a light bulb on, well, that'll serve the purpose if you can't get it by a window. And we could get it by a window. So we put an incandescent light on the fern.
It thrived.
And it seemed to grow, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Very, very interesting. One of the adornments you have there in your lapel is a service club. You've been active in Rotary for how many years, Wayne? At Zanesville, Louisville?
Yes, in Louisville. I joined Rotary in Louisville about 1944, I think. Transferred my membership to Zanesville, retained my membership there, and when I came to Alliance, I transferred it to Alliance, so I've been a member of Rotary for a long time.
Yeah. Been active in that, traveled abroad with the Rotary group a few summers ago.
Been fortunate to be able to make a tour of Europe with the group, yes. Had the opportunity to serve as president of the local club in Rotary, and as a result of that was given the opportunity to attend an international convention in Houston, Texas, which was quite an experience.
It would be. But so I remember your registrar's meetings got you around a bit too.
Registrar's annual conventions were always held in big cities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I attended every one. during the period of time that I was a registrar, and they took us to the first one I think I attended was at Phoenix, Arizona. But they took us to St. Louis, to Minneapolis, to San Francisco, to Los Angeles, to Miami, to New Orleans, to Dallas, all big cities, and I'm sure that without those conventions being there, and without my interest in the registrar's activities, I wouldn't have seen all those cities. But I became interested in the activities of the state association, and served on a number of committees in the state, and we have an annual convention also in the state, and I served 3 years as treasurer of the state association, and I served 3 years on one of the national committees as non-traditional study. And as a result of that, I had an opportunity to get an extra trip or two in, because the national committee held a meeting once That's a year right. to plan for the convention. Mm-hmm. And I think those were interesting experiences. They helped in my local situation, because it gave me a wider perspective of the office of the registrar and the responsibilities, and I think helped my position here.
Well, there are probably some other facets, but you also been interested in and active in your church too. You've been in the same church all your life, is
yes.
that right?
Yes. As a youngster, the church was the Reformed Church.
Right.
And in Louisville, we went to the Reformed Church in Louisville. Ultimately, that church made the combination to become the United Church of Christ, and we retained our membership in that church. When we moved to Zanesville, we then joined the United Church of Christ in Zanesville. When I came to Alliance, we joined the United Church of Christ in Alliance. Mm-hmm. The governing body of the local church in the United Church of Christ is a consistory. It's an elected group of men and women who are elected by the congregations to manage the church, both spiritually and commercially, if you want to say that.
Yes, the everyday happenings.
The everyday happenings of the church. Mm-hmm. And I think I was fortunate enough, perhaps, to serve on the consistory in all three of those those towns. I was on the consistory in Louisville, and on the consistory in Zanesville. In Alliance, I was on the consistory for a number of years, and served as president of the consistory for about 10 years.
And taught a Sunday school class.
And taught a Sunday school class, right.
Right.
The experience was very rewarding. I don't think I would trade that. I think that my dedication to my church, I think, was well worthwhile. I don't really think it was.
Well, I suppose I couldn't let this pass without saying that the success and the pleasure you've had have probably been due in large part to a diet of pancakes every Saturday
yeah,
morning.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's
How
right.
long has that been a...
Oh, that's been going on for some time.
Some time. Okay.
Yes, usually we had a little more time for breakfast on Saturday morning. And I inveigled my wife into making pancakes. I like pancakes, and we never had time to add them during the week. Mm-hmm. We were always in too much of a hurry.
All right. Well, as you look back on coaching now, do you think the attitude of boys has changed? We're talking about Bob Wright being a disciplinarian and being exacting. Do you think you can have that approach today, or do you have to modify that?
Well, I've been out of coaching for 16 years.
Yes.
On the day-to-day
right.
contact with the boys, I think that there's been some change. I think that the And I don't know how much this would affect coaching, but I think there are so many things that the young person today has access to that tends to water down his dedication or her dedication to an athletic endeavor. I mean, it has a chance to do that. Mm-hmm. The temptations are much greater. You know, the great number of things that are available to young people today to do were not available
right.
In 1937 when I took over the football team at Louisville. We didn't have the great number of interferences with the time of that that candidate for a football team. And we didn't have it in Zanesville even. Through the 55, 57, 58, the 3 years we made the state tournament. We didn't have as much interference then as you do now. I never, to my knowledge, had any kind of a drug problem. I've never had that experience. And I'm sure that that's a question and a problem that does face many coaches today. I think that the wide range of recreational activities that are available become deterrents to dedication to their practice and their time. I don't say that that's true in all cases, but I think that's a factor that enters into the consideration. I really think it is.
I noticed earlier you qualified, you said, to his or her, and you a few years ago you wouldn't have had that in.
That's right.
A new aspect.
That's true. See, that has only been in, you know, that's
recent.
Yeah, very recently. Yeah. When you consider that we built the Temkin Building here and opened it in 1970, and at that time there was no consideration for varsity dressing rooms for women's athletics.
Right.
And there's no provision made in the Temkin Building. Today, the you must provide facilities for varsity teams in women's athletics so that their place to prepare for the contest is just as good.